So personality is the dynamic organization within the individual of those psychophysical systems which determines your unique adjustments to the environment. That's what is your personality is all about. So it's a very, very dynamic, very, very, varied organization within the individual, which can change at any point in time, okay? But it's a very dynamic organization within an individual to those psychophysical systems that you come around, that you determine, and your adjustment to the environment. So this is what Gordon Allport, the most famous psychologist, has defined. And he's also defined that, Robbins have defined that personality is the sum total of ways in which an individual reacts and interacts with others. We describe it in terms of measurable traits a person exhibits. Measuring personality, how do we measure personality now? The two most commonly used models of measuring personality are self-report survey, and second one is your observer rating survey. Okay, so one is your self-analysis, self-report. There is a questionnaire, you analyze yourself, how do you fare in each question. And another one is observed by what others, your work, your colleagues, your peers, your manager, what they observe about you. Okay, so self-report survey and observer rating survey. Personality determinants are, various studies have revealed that individual's personality may be a result of hereditary or of the environment or both. So it could be either hereditary, which means from the childhood, from legacy, you have been like that, you have been taught like that, okay? Or it could be the environment that you have worked in. You know, from the childhood, the moment you were born, everybody is in the family is a doctor. Okay, from the childhood that you're born, your one thing that is there ingrained in your mind is that I have to be a doctor. Okay, even at the child stage, you know, you have all doctor kits available to you. From the childhood only, you play those, do role playing of doctors. And your parents always constantly, your grandparents, your, family relatives also says that, our child is going to become doctor in a while. Because everybody is a doctor. So those are some of the personality determinants that the research says that individual's personality may be a result of a hereditary or of environment. So it could be something which is there in your genes, which was hereditary, which was because you developed that affinity because of the hereditary, or you developed that affinity because of the environment. Everybody is a doctor in the house, so I will also become one. Okay, so let's look at hereditary more closely. So hereditary, let's understand this in little detail. So this is the genetic transmission of attributes from parent to the offspring. Parent had a certain quality and it has been inherited by the offspring. So these attributes may be, sometimes it could be physical, it could be physiological, or it could be psychological as well. Sometimes it could be just a physical, you know, which is kind of can be seen by anybody. It could be physiological, it could be something related to your internal, sometimes it could be just mental also. So one of the famous approaches identifying and classifying primary traits that govern behaviors are the Myers and Briggs type indicator, which is famously called as, popularly known as MBTI. So MBTI, each of these traits is defined below. So these are the different combinations that you get. The first one is your extroverted, which is termed as E, versus introverted, which is termed as I, which is opposite to each other. So each of the types that we were going to discuss will be opposite of each other. Please note that in the beginning itself. Extroversion refers to spending time in the outer world and people, which means you like to talk to the people, you like to the people, the things around you. So you're highly socializing, okay? While introversion means spending time with your inner world, which is very, very close to you, which is very close, probably with few key relationships of yours, otherwise with your own self. You're busy with your own self. So that's extroversion is about spending time outside, on the outside world, and with people outside. Introverted means spending time with your inner world, which is with your own image, with your own very, very close peer, or with your own self. Okay, so that's the difference between extroversion and introversion. Next type is your sensing, versus intuitive. Sensing is termed as S, intuitive is termed as N. So this is the only difference. It's not with the first letter of the word. Okay, so intuitive means N. So if you can see here, it was first letters, but that's not the criteria. Okay, so hence you need to remember what it is being denoted as. So extroversion is denoted as E, introversion is denoted as I. Sensing is denoted as S, whereas intuitive is denoted as N. Okay, so it's not I. Sensing refers to focusing on information through your own five senses, your smell, your taste, your sight, all of that. So it's your complete understanding or judgment is based on you focus on information processing through your own senses. While intuitive is about focusing on the patterns and the possibilities people view in the information received. So when you keep receiving the information, what you do is you kind of analyze the pattern that you're receiving it in at. So you try to make parallels from the patterns by which you receive the information in. Clear with sensing and intuition? The third type is thinking, versus which is denoted as T, versus feeling, which is denoted as F. So thinking versus feeling. So thinking is basically thoughts, referring it to putting greater emphasis on objective principles and impersonal facts. You do not go with personal facts. If you know some, if you already have some information, background information in place, you will not go with that. We will be more objective with the fact, which is actual fact. And based on the factual information, you will make a decision. Very, very objective, which is your thinking. The next one is your feeling, which is you will always take a decision based on you will always put greater emphasis on personal concerns and the people that are involved. You'll be very highly bogged with the kind of relationship that is involved in that whole episode. The kind of information or personal concerns that you have, they shouldn't have been like that. So it's a very feeling level. It's a very concerned level, okay? So this is how you take a decision, basis the feeling. So thinking versus feeling. So one takes a decision basis your one trait says that you completely put factual information in place and you do not go with the personal information that you have, and you do not go with impersonal facts. Okay, and you do not go with personal facts at all, and you completely make it impersonal and make your decision completely objective. Whereas feeling refers to putting your greater emphasis on your personal concerns and your feelings, your concerns, your empathy, and the kind of people who are involved in it. Okay, so your decision making will be based on feeling. The fourth type is your judging and perceiving. So here again, judging is denoted by J, perceiving is denoted by P. Judging refers to preference of a more structured and decided lifestyle. So means you have already made up your mind, you already judged it. Okay, so it's very structured and pre-decided. Okay, and while perceiving refers to a more flexible and adaptable lifestyle. So this is the two things. So judging will refer to a more structured and decided lifestyle. And you will not go with anything else. You will already have your mind made. While perceiving will be more flexible. You will, as and when you will, it will keep, and it is very, very dynamic as well. Okay, so it's more flexible. So I hope you are clear with all the four types. Extroversion versus introversion. Sensing versus intuition. Thinking versus feeling. And judging versus perceiving. So the MBTI, the further information on personality and values is that as people act on their preferred type, they form their unique approach towards the world, isn't it? Don't you think so? Everybody behaves differently. Everybody makes a judgment differently. Some thinks about it. Some are extroverted people. Some are very intuitive, very busy with their own self. And some judges the whole situation. Some are very, very perceptive. So they form their unique approach towards the world, towards information, towards decisions, towards the other people. Okay, so everybody act on their own preferred type. So that is the reason it is called as MBTI, the Myers and Briggs type indicator. So it identifies the type of the personality. The MBTI has been widely used by organizations including Apple, AT&T, Citigroup, GE's. All best of the organizations have been using MBTI since many years now. The value of MBTI largely lies in creating self-awareness. It is something that you understand your type and accordingly regulate yourself, and giving career advice. But the researchers have been, the psychologists behind the MBTI have been again and again saying and putting forth saying that please do not use it as a selection tool. Please use it for creating self-awareness, use it for career advice, for their own career growth, etc. You can use it, but do not use it as a selection tool. Core self-evaluation. It is the basic assessment individuals make about their self-worth and capabilities. Okay, so this is a very, very basic, very, very easy assessment. So this is about understanding your own worth and your own capabilities that you have. Individuals who have positive core self-evaluations will always tend to like themselves and see themselves as effective and capable. They will always be very positive about their own self. They will have high self-concept. Such people tend to perform better because of the ambitious goals that they have, and they are very highly committed and persistent as well. Machiavellianism, which is also popularly known as MAC, it suggests the principles of conduct laid down by Machiavelli, marked by cunning, duplicity or bad faith. So this is one of the tools which has been used, and but not very, very popularly used, I would say. It is high in Machiavellianism implies practicality and result orientation. Okay, so it does not talk about anything else. It talks about more on how practical it is and how result oriented are you. The other personality trait relevant to the organization is narcissism. Narcissism is the pursuit of gratification from egoistic admiration of one's idealized image and attribute. This originated from the Greek mythology, where a young man named Narcissus fell in love with his own image while he saw his reflection in a pool of water. So those days there were no mirrors. So he suddenly chanced upon a pool of water and he saw his own image. And he was awestruck with the image of his own self. And hence he became very, very... this narcissism came into limelight from his concept of self-love, by chance, which he chanced upon his own self-image. Okay, he wasn't so cognizant about, but the moment he saw his own image, he was so awestruck by it that he fell in love with his own image. Okay, so this is all about narcissism. It's the own gratification, that instant gratification or the pursuit of gratification that you give to yourself because of your self-admiration that you have of being idolized and of being the best. Self-monitoring. Now, what is self-monitoring? This is another personality trait. It's a personality trait that makes an individual pay greater attention to a social situation in order to alter their behaviors to fit that situation. So you understand a situation, you observe the situation and you alter, because you're so self-aware, you self-monitor your behavior to be able to fit into that situation. High self-monitors will easily blend into social situations, by the way, because they appear friendly, they're relaxed, they're more sensitive to the social cues, what they are aware, what it requires in a social context, and they are more concerned with acting appropriately than being true to themselves. So they are sometimes faking it also, okay, but that's fine. So this is how they self-monitor themselves. So hence, they easily blend into, so in a social situation, they are very, very successful, because they completely blend themselves and mold themselves as per the requirement. Low self-monitors, they act themselves regardless of the situation. And they are less sensitive to social cues and has a greater consistency between their attitude and their behavior. Risk-taking. This is the act of doing something that involves taking chances in order to achieve a goal. So in order to achieve a goal, you will just take a chance, which may involve high risk, okay? But with the desire to achieve, with the end goal being, you know, the goal that is there in front of you, you would be undertaking that. You would not mind. You will undermine the risk that is involved in it. So high risk taking people tend to make more rapid decisions and use less information than the low risk takers. Always note that. They will always make fast and quick, rapid decisions and use less information. They will not think about, they will not evaluate too many options. They will use less of information than compared to the low risk takers. Low risk takers will kind of evaluate, do a lot of pro and cause analysis. All of that will happen. Other orientation, people have varying levels of other orientation, which is your thinking, caring, sharing, you know, acting in accordance with the interest of those who are other oriented, and they feel more obligated to help others who have helped them. So for example, if somebody has extended help to you, you will be highly cognizant of that, and you would want to extend that help further as and when the time arises. Okay, so that's what is your other orientation all about. Now, values. Values are our fundamental beliefs. These are something that we have been, we have grown with. And these are the principles we use to define the mode of conduct or a state of existence that is right, good, or just. This too should be done like this because this is how it has been taught. This is should be like this. Okay, so this is my value. So values have two attributes. Either it is to do with content and it is to do with intensity. The content attribute defines whether a mode of conduct is significant. So content will describe whether you are whether it is important enough, whether it is significant enough. The intensity will attribute it specifies the level of its significance, that at what level. If it is significant, okay, fine. To what level? It is moderate significant, or it's high significant, or it's low significant. Okay, so the content and the intensity will describe the significance, whether or not a mode of conduct is significant. And if it is significant, how, what is the level of its significance? What is the intensity of it? Values, however, plays a major part of our lives, and individuals hold in the earlier years. I mean, when you are growing up at the child level, at that time only, you know, because of your parents, because of your teachers, that your friends and others that you have been brought up with, you have developed this value. So it's not going to change very easily. It is only about adapting or adopting new values, but your existing values will remain like that. It is not something that you will, we're going to forego ever, because it has been established in the early growing stage of yours. When people join organizations, they have value-based preconceived notions about right and wrong. If you join an alcohol company, okay, I have seen some people are complete having taboo against alcohol or smoke or anything. And by virtue of, you know, being able to do well in the interview and the qualifications that you bring, you got a very good job in an alcohol company. Now, you already have a preconceived notion about the main product of the company, alcohol. How do you actually work there? So this clouds the objectivity and rationality, which impact attitudes and behavior. Then you decide that you keep looking for further options because you are not very sure whether you would like to join this company because you are against alcohol. Alcohol actually, distracts families. It distracts people's career. You have been brought up with those values from the childhood. That is what has been taught to you. Okay, so you do not even, you it's a non-negotiator for you. So you do not even, get an acceptance of say, okay, if you take alcohol in a while, you know, if you're in a controlled state of mind, it doesn't matter much. You are not at all, it's a non-negotiator for you. So hence, you will actually compromise because your objectivity will completely, your rational thinking will completely be clouded because of the preconceived values that you have. It can be classified into terminal and instrumental values. Now, what are terminal values? They are desirable states of existence and signify the life objectives of a person to be achieved through his or her behavior. It includes things like, you know, happiness, your self-respect, family security, recognition, freedom at job, autonomy, comfortable life, professional excellence. All of these are your terminal values. What are instrumental values? These are core values. Permanent in nature. These can still change. These can still be flexible. Okay, but here, instrumental values cannot change. Okay, they're permanent and they comprise of personal traits, which signifies preferable modes of behavior. Basis this, you will have your preferable modes of behavior, like what we have explained you earlier about the MBTI, and includes values like honesty. If you're honest, you'll be honest in your work, you will be honest in your organization, you'll be honest in your studies, you will be honest on your in your relationships. That's permanent. Okay, ambition, sincerity, independence, imaginativeness, courageousness, competitiveness, all of these are your instrumental values. Now, learning. Now, when it comes to learning, learning is defined as a relatively permanent transformation in behavior owing to individual's interaction with his or her environment. What an individual has learned and how he has impacted his things around him. That is what is learning. And it's considered to be slightly permanent in nature. It's a transformation process which an individual goes through. And over a period of time, it starts showing into his behavior. Learning tends to impact individual behavior significantly. How does it do? How does it impact? It impacts by influencing the abilities, perception of the roles, motivation and knowledge. Learning can also be referred to as modification of behavior through practice, training, or experience. Okay, so over a period of time, you have learned behavioral, you have taken some behavioral training, and you have actually started modifying your behavior. So let's say, for example, you have take a behavioral training on MBTI. Okay, you understood the type of yours. What is your dominant type? And then accordingly, you're regulating yourself as per the situation required. Right, so that is modification of your behavior, either through practice, either through training, or getting exposed to some experience. The five important components of learning. There are five important components under learning, which has been described as learning involves change, whether it is good or bad. Okay, it does involve change. Not all changes reflect learning, and to constitute learning, change should be relatively permanent. Okay, so every change, not all the change will actually reflect learning, okay? And it may not even bring learning as well. But it should be permanent. If there is a change, it should be permanent. Learning is reflected in behavior. And any change in an individual's thought process or attitude not accompanied by behavior change, it is not learning. So if at all the person has subjected to a particular behavioral training, okay, and there is no, say for example, on the person has been continuously not been able to manage his TAT, he's not able to come on time, his deadlines are not being met. So hence his manager decided that he needs to plan and organize himself because he's always out of the place and his things are not getting done within time. So what the manager decided is that he decided to send him for a planning and organizing training program, and he has gone for that program and spent one day on this. Okay, but and continuously he comes, when he comes back, he is being asked, and he has continues to be a defaulter. He's still not able to meet his TAT. He's still not able to close his deals on time. He's still not able to send his presentations on time, reports on time. So he's still defaulting there. So which means there is no behavior change, which means learning has not happened. Behavior that is caused from maturity, disease, or physical damages, it does not constitute learning. Okay, say for example, you have learned, you have changed your behavior just because you feel you have matured enough. You have seen suddenly there is a vacuum which has created in your at your home, and your father is not able to be a breadwinner, and you need to be a breadwinner in the family. And suddenly a boy, young boy who was very vivacious and who was very fun loving, suddenly becomes very, very a changed person just because of the the responsibilities that has been added recently on his shoulders. So he might become it, that change might have happened because of his maturity that he has taken from the situation that he is, or is it because of disease? Because if he's going through a certain illness and he's unable, so obviously his mood is not that, you know, he's able to interact with people. So that change may not be constituted as learning. Any practice or experience must be reinforced for learning to occur. And if reinforcement does not happen, the behavior will, over a period of time, disappear. So hence, any learning that has been subjected to needs to be reinforced so that there is a change happens. There is a learning that happens. Okay, so for example, if you're teaching your cook to make something as per your choice, okay, something, let's say, some healthy diet that you work, you're teaching her how to make vegetables without oil, you know, how to make grilled vegetables with just brushing the pan and without not even 1 teaspoon of oil. So she has never done that in her lifetime. Right. So once if you tell her that, you know, on call you said, okay, madam, kya banana hai? You know, you just give instructions saying that, you know, you have to make the vegetables without any oil. I need to eat those vegetables in the night. So yeah, she just understood. She just said whatever it is and she started making it and everything got stuck on the pan and it was horrible. And next day, 3 days later, again, you somehow managed to eat and you find, I mean, you did not like it, of course, but you said, okay, as long as cooked food, let me eat. So after three days, you've been called again saying that, what do I cook for dinner? You again said the same thing. The person says, last time I tried making it, but I was not, it was not good enough. So you said, you know, that day only I taught you, you're not, so you have to reinforce it. You have to probably teach her again. She probably did not understand. Okay, you'll have to reinforce. So hence you, for learning to happen, for the change to happen, you have to reinforce for a while. And the worst part is that each one of us are not very, very open to doing the reinforcement. So hence the learning sometimes gets ceased. So Torrington and all in 2005 stated that there are a number of ways people learn and outlined the following as some of the effective means of work-related learning techniques. So what are those? So Torrington has said that these are some of the most effective ways of learning by people at work. Action learning. Second is your coaching. Third is your mentoring. Fourth is your peer relationships, the learning from your peers. And the last one is your learning logs. So it is a diagrammatic representation of the amount of learning in relation to time. Okay, so action learning is something which is a very, very key thing now. Okay, any leadership program will always be, accompanied by an action learning project. So you learned those competencies and now you work on a action learning project. Okay, so you create those actions and you solve those problems using those actions that you've learned. Okay, so coaching is where probably you have been assigned to a coach and you are regularly going through. The coach will only help you to reach the destination. He will not and he will keep asking you questions. He will not talk too much. He will let you only do it. Mentoring is when you're associated with a manager, when a senior level person is guiding you throughout to be able to reach from X to Y. Then you learn from a lot from your peer relationships. You learn from each other from the lateral positions. And creating a learning log. How do you actually keep a track of your learning log? Now comes your learning theories and organizational implications. There are four theories of learning that provide different ways of individual learning. And these are these four theories of learning, which is very, very popular and which has been time and again referred by various psychologists and every organization. Whenever you decide on training, you always decide which kind of learning theory you're going to use. First is your classical conditioning. Second is your operant conditioning. Third, cognitive learning. And fourth is your social learning. So these are the four most predominant theories of learning. Now, what is classical conditioning? It is based on premise that a physical event termed as a stimulus that initially does not elicit a response gradually acquires the capacity to elicit that response because of repeated pairing with a stimulus that elicits a reaction. Okay, this I can give an example of a dog, you know, which has been, you know, associated with the sound of a dog. It's the arrival of food with the sound of a bell. Okay, so initially it was done like that, and initially the bell was rang, and the dog was called to take the food. Okay, so that was the pattern which was developed, and then over a period of time, when the bell rings for any other occasion also, the dog will start salivating because he starts expecting food. And if the food doesn't come, he starts salivating and he gets really inquisitive why the food has not come. Okay, because he starts relating it, because he conditions his mind with the sound of the bell. Okay, operant conditioning theory. The learning theory that states people learn by continually looking for ways to achieve more positive reinforcement in terms of rewards and avoid negative reinforcement in terms of punishment. Okay, so the people learn because they get rewards, and they do not learn, they reduce on the intensity of learning because there is a negative reinforcement in terms of punishment. Okay, social learning, it is also known as observational learning. A lot of people go through this learning. It is also called as on the job training, where you learn from your peers. You just observe what your colleagues are doing. You get assigned to one buddy, and that buddy keeps doing his regular a day at work, and you observe his day at work, and over a period of time you learn that and you replicate that work for yourself. So it states that people learn through observing others' behavior, attitudes and outcomes of those behaviors. Okay, so it's completely basis the observation. The last one is your cognitive theory. This theory is not concerned with the relationship between stimuli and responses. What was the stimuli created and how did you respond to it? It is not concerned. But with the plans that people choose and the way they adopt to pursue, and how these plans are modified by experience over a period of time, how these are modified. Okay, so how do you actually decide to, what is your plan to adopt, to be able to pursue on these plans? And over a period of time, as and when you experience, you keep modifying time and again. That's what is your cognitive theory. Now, definition of attitude. Attitude is a settled way of thinking, of feeling about something. Okay, this is something which I have committed to. Okay, it's a settled way of thoughts about something that I have. Okay. For example, I am very positive about helping others, okay? And there is another friend of mine who feels that, you know, if you help others, they might not help you back, or you always get deceited over a period of time. So hence, I will not help. That's the attitude that she is committed to. And my attitude is that I would always extend my help. Okay, so that's what is your definition of help as per Oxford Dictionary. The components. What are the components of attitude? Cognition reflects the information or belief about something. So this is the cognition, the mental ability which is working, and it reflects the information, belief about a particular thing. Affect. So first is your cognition, the three components. The first is your cognition, second is your affect, and third is your behavior. So cognition reflects the information or the belief that you have about something. Second is the affect, which reflects the emotions and the feelings associated with that something. And the third is behavior, which reflects the tendency of an individual to behave in a particular way towards something. Okay, I do not like it, so that's the reason I will not go for it. Right? So, one is your belief about that. Like, I give you an example. From the childhood, my son is very, very against consuming tomatoes. Okay, he can't even stand tomatoes. Okay, so that's the cognition that he has. So that's the relation in his mind that anything which is made out of tomato, anything which has got tomato, will not be good enough for me. Okay, so that's the information or that's the belief about that particular fruit. Second is the effect is that his feelings about that. The moment I eat tomato, maybe it will be tangy, maybe I will get allergic, maybe I will it might not be, you know, likable to my senses. It might not be palatable for me. So that's the emotion that is associated with the product. The third is my behavior about this, his behavior with relation to the tomato. Now, if he goes somewhere who is not aware that he does not like tomato and he has been offered that, his behavior towards that, of having, not having, or completely get jittery about it, it's so if he is aware, he should be able to self-regulate that. So that's the three things. So it's about the cognition of the which reflects the information about the or the belief that you have about the product, about something. Second is your emotions associated with it, and third is the behavior reflecting how you will behave in a particular way towards that particular product. Cognition and affect are generally interwoven. They are linked together. It is the behaviors that reflect the attitudes largely. Okay, so whatever attitude is there within, it will actually over a period of time display through your behavior. So cognitive dissonance is an uncomfortable feeling of arising from holding conflicting thoughts at the same time. Because you have so many thoughts, this is conflicting with the other, this is the, so there will be a dissonance which will happening in your cognition. They change either their attitudes or behavior, or they form a justification for the conflict. So because of the conflicting ideas that are there in your mind, conflicting thoughts that you have, so what they will, it will happen is they will change either their attitudes or their behavior, or they will form a justification. So either you'll change the attitude or you'll just create a justification saying that this is why it has happened. You'll just give a justification, give a excuse for it. Thank you so much.